You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Norm Roach, one of Pinellas County, Florida's commissioners. Commissioner, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity. Good to talk with you.
Commissioner Roach, I saw on the internet a story from USA Today just a bit ago, the headline being Florida's Pinellas County rejects fluoride in drinking water. Now, I want to get to that in a minute or so, but before we do that, can you tell the listeners exactly where Pinellas County, Florida is and what the commission does and what you do with the commission?
Sure. If you look actually at a map of Florida, you'll see about midway down the state on the west coast, another peninsula. We are very unique. We are the peninsula of a peninsula, and Pinellas County is surrounded by water there, of course, the Gulf and Tampa Bay. So right about the middle of the state of Florida on the west coast, you'll find Pinellas County. I am a member of a 7-member Board of County Commissioners here. We've got about 275 square miles, nearly a million folks in it. We're one of the most densely populated counties in the state of Florida. The Board of County Commission 7-member makeup is 3 at-large commissioners and 4 single-member district commissioners. And we oversight and operate the county budget for all services from animal services to emergency medical services, ambulance, sheriffs, clerk of the courts, park systems, I mean, you name it. It's quite an extensive responsibility, and I frankly honor the opportunity.
I'm looking at the website right here, pinellascounty.org, and it says that meetings are held twice a month. Is that correct, or are there more meetings than that?
The formal board public meetings are held twice a month. The offset weeks, if you will, we hold board work sessions, which are very similar to a formal public hearing, but no formal agenda items are, for the most part, voted on. The citizens can come and be heard. It's a chance for the board to have work sessions to work out any details before we get into, per se, the formal public hearing meetings.
Okay, and from this matter that we're about to talk about, it seems like the citizens of your county are given full access to all decisions that are made. Is that right?
Oh, yes, very much so. Not only to the boards. I mean, from my perspective, the Board of County Commission here is a full-time job. Folks have access to us 7 days a week, in effect, and, of course, plenty through the wonders of technology and email and phones, of course, and in our work sessions and board meetings, our citizens have the opportunity to engage us at every level of the process.
That's a good thing for democracy. Now,
Indeed. This
article from USA Today, where it says, again, Florida's Pinellas County rejects fluoride in drinking water. This has caused quite a stir, not so much nationwide, but in your area, because I've seen from the local paper there, which comes across as TampaBay.com on the internet, but I guess it's the St. Petersburg Times.
Correct.
There's a lot of, it seems, competing opinions, acrimony, and I guess the unbiased observer would look and really question, why is it that such an issue is bringing out such divisiveness? I guess maybe fluoride being something that people have differing opinions on has something to do with it, but it seems like, I don't know, to me anyway, it seems like there's a lot of anger out there. Am I wrong about that?
It depends on the level of it and what exactly their anger about. And in there lies a great deal of the reasoning behind the issue we're facing. You have sort of the overarching concept of fluoridating the public drinking water supply. And some anecdotal evidence, of course, from the CDC that says fluoridation of public drinking water supplies is one of the greatest sort of discoveries in public health. And that's not necessarily untrue. But the issue here was not, quote, the concept of fluoridating public water. Moreover, it was a discussion and questions, if you will, on the actual chemical that we're using to fluoridate the water. And then, of course, what level of involvement those who ingest that water every day have in the decision-making process by virtue of a public referendum or a vote, if you will. And unfortunately, that's sort of where the information got derailed during our initial meeting. Pinellas County has actually been fluoridating the water since 2003. It was voted on and it began in 2004. And over the years since, it has constantly been an issue that's been brought forward and asked for reconsideration. But again, not the overarching concept of fluoridating water so much as it is the type of chemical we're using to fluoridate the water, and then the fact that the citizens never actually had the opportunity to vote on that issue to begin with. So it got caught up in the minutiae, if you will, of all the latest political partisanship games that a lot of the media do play, our local newspaper notwithstanding, they're right in the middle of it. And during the meeting in particular, one gentleman who spoke up made some inflammatory remarks relating to Russia and some other sort of crazy remarks, if you will. And the narrative was built from that and wrapped around that, that this was all about sort of a Tea Party movement out to save $200,000. And I make no bones about it. I'm not politically correct, David. I say what I believe needs to be said. So I will say very clearly that the newspaper here blew it. They misrepresented it, whipped up a very big frenzy on the issue. That wasn't actually the issue, if you will. So we've been overwhelmed, frankly, by, I'd say myself in my office alone, probably close to 300 emails and phone calls, the majority of which have been in favor of the decision to stop adding additional levels of fluoride to the water, which really speaks to the incorrectness, if you will, of labeling this as some sort of Tea Party right-wing conspiracy movement, because the majority of registered voters in Pinellas County are, in fact, Democrat. There's been a recent study out, actually, from TBN Newspapers here. A reader poll: did the Pinellas County make the right decision on ending the adding of additional fluoride? 83% saying yes. So to look at that versus the registered voters in here, the claim that this is a Tea Party movement just simply doesn't wash. And in fact, I appeared before the board as a citizen back in 2003 prior to being elected and spoke of these issues back then, which was the chemical being used, the fluorosilicic acid, and the right for the citizens to vote. And of course, back in 2003, the Tea Party wasn't involved. So unfortunately, it's been a bit of misinformation that went out there, and I've been working very hard to set the record straight, if you will. And I thank you for the opportunity to do that as well in your medium.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Oh, yes, sir. And another one of those topics, if you will, that wasn't reported is probably result in somewhere around a savings, if you will, of $200,000. Well, that wasn't really the fiscal impact. It wasn't at all, certainly, my biggest concern. And in fact, the board directed staff to look at somehow trying to reallocate that savings into the Health and Human Services Department to get those who are desperately in need, the underprivileged, the indigent, who really need maybe some additional fluoride treatments. Let's get it to them versus putting it in the water supply in hopes of getting it to them, if you follow my meaning.
Sure.
And in fact, let's also take a look at, through the supervisor of elections, on how we might put this out for a referendum. So from my general perspective, when you're talking about the public drinking water supply, no science should ever be considered closed. No matter should ever be considered closed, whether it is the chemicals used to purify it or medical additives after the fact. I don't think the topic is ever closed, nor ever should be. This is the public drinking water supply, and I believe it to be something that is paramount to our duty as a county commission, as one of the main core functions, and that is to make certain that we provide fresh, clean drinking water. Additives after the facts, well, in there lies a discussion that I believe is worthy. So I wouldn't consider it over, but I hope that once all the rhetorical dust clears, if you will, we'll be able to get to the actual issue at hand, and that is the type of fluoride or treatment we're going to use and whether this needs to go to the citizens for a vote.
What is it about that particular chemical, Commissioner, that has you raising some questions?
Sure. Well, let me give you some brief background. I spent 10 years here working in our utility department here in the water supply, and then additional 5 years in geotechnical engineering, which is the subsurface investigation of Florida, where the water's held. So to state that I have some level of knowledge in this is a very fair statement. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, fluoride occurs naturally in a couple of forms, calcium fluoride, sodium fluoride. The chemical that we use here was approved here without a referendum was the fluorosilicic acid, which in effect is a byproduct of the phosphate industry and but a few molecules away from fertilizer, really. And there are some questionable data out there on each side, mind you. There's a litany of information you can find that says, hey, fluoridation as a sort of glossed concept is a good thing. But then you look on the other side and what you're seeing is questions about the specific types. So, and I think, again, since there are some questions out there with respect to the fluorosilicic acid, its long-term impacts when ingesting it day-to-day with respect to osteoporosis, heavy fluorosis, there are some issues with IBS and irritable bowel syndrome, and there's a lot of unanswered questions. Even those who appeared before us, frankly, in our meetings, and we went through 3.5 hours of deliberations on this, and we had dental experts and medical experts and scientists before us who, even among themselves, could not come to a consensus on what is the best application. Is it topical by virtue of brushing your teeth? Is it ingesting it every day? What is the proper chemical to use? They couldn't agree among themselves. So when that is a question, when the science behind putting something into the public drinking water supply is a question, from my perspective, it's stop it until you guys have your ducks in a row. I'm not going to guesswork that when we're dealing with the public drinking water supply. I believe it was the right move made by our board, and I certainly stand by it. That is not to say that if the scientists come forward with all the recent details and studies and the people vote for it as an informed decision, that the citizens, by virtue of our republic, governed by a democracy and guided by a constitution, if that's the way it works, that's the way it works then. Whenever there's a question, particularly with respect to public drinking water supply, I'm not going to guess. I expect the experts to present very clear information with respect to anything we add after the fact of purification. And that just wasn't the case in our meetings. Nobody could give me a definitive answer, and I'm just not going to use the drinking water supply on a guesswork.
I wish everybody felt the way you did about things that affect the public, but unfortunately they don't. I don't know why. I don't know why most folks can't adopt this simple reasoning, but perhaps it's politics. Everything's politically charged nowadays.
Well, I think you make a good point, Dave, but this is in fact the point. When it comes to that sort of issue, public drinking water, that's not politics, you know, and it shouldn't be in there. So I think you're absolutely right. We're in too politically charged of an environment to where we can't look at something like this as just a science base or a reason base or a common sense base. It has to have some sort of politics attached to it. And unfortunately, I think that speaks to a lot of the reasons why our country's in the turmoil it is right now.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would agree with that. So you were the swing vote on this, weren't you?
Not unless you say swing vote. We had a 7 and it was 4-3. I sort of spearheaded it, if you will. I'm the one who brought it forward and wanted it to be discussed and voted upon. I actually made 3 motions. My first motion was that we halt adding additional levels of this chemical until we've had the science clarified. None of the board members would second that. In fact, one of my colleagues said, try again. And I said, okay, well, why don't I move that we stop adding additional fluoride until such time that we can put it out to the public for a vote. Nobody would second that motion, and then one of my colleagues looked and said, simplify it, Norm. And I said, okay, why don't we stop adding fluoride? And that got a second and a vote, and we were done.
Amazing.
Which, in its sense, okay, let's simplify it, but I was certainly open to let's get the data. But if you wanted to shut it down, I'm comfortable with that, too. I was trying to be a little more balanced. If you folks on each side of the issue are passionate about it, I'm willing to hear both sides, no doubt. But when it comes down to it, if it's a matter of shutting it off or on, and there's questions regarding it, let's shut it off. I'm comfortable with it, and I stand by it.
And for the benefit of the listeners, what you're talking about, motion and seconding, of course, is Robert's Rules of Order, parliamentary procedures, and that's what Congress uses itself, right?
Correct, when they actually work to get something done, yes.
Right.
Sorry, that was a little commentary on my part.
Look at the numbers. People are absolutely disgusted with Washington, D.C., among many other things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's...
It's a fascinating dichotomy, is it not? I mean, we disapprove of them as a collective, but we vote for them as a selective, and therefore do not achieve our objective. Man, write that down. But is that not the issue? Everyone else's congressperson is a problem. Mine's fine.
Right.
That's why we all just keep getting back in, you know.
That's been proven over the years many times by polls that people do not like Congress as a whole, but they love their individual representative. I understand now how it happened and why. In your email, you said that there's been a lot of disinformation and you wanted to clear the air, as you said, which hopefully for the listeners, if they were paying close attention, they can see now how it evolved. And this is a fascinating study of politics, not just on the local level, but politics, period, how you have to say things a certain way in order to get somebody to second that. It's pretty amazing.
Sure.
Why do you think it is that the media, and we could start with USA Today, which is owned by, I think, Gannett or Gannett, however you say, and of course they're one of the biggest mainstream media outlets in the United States and probably the world, all the way to your local paper, the St. Petersburg Times. And I'm not familiar with who might own that. Maybe Gannett or Gannett owns that also.
I think it's funded through the Poynter Institute.
The Poynter Institute? Okay. And who were they, just on a quick side note?
It's a think tank, a college, if you will, think tank at Poynter Institute. And I'm comfortable telling you that if you read them, and I've been around here for a long time, they're a very liberal-leaning newspaper, if you will. That's where it started, Dave. It was released from the AP wire as misinformation from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then, I mean, that begat USA Today. And I've interviewed, frankly, with Berkeley Press. I've interviewed with the New York Times on this. I interviewed with NBC Nightly News, the Rachel Maddow Show.
Right.
The Daily Show, for heaven's sakes, called me 2 days ago.
Right.
And wanted to do a spoof on it. I love your show. I laugh at it sometimes, but this is too serious a matter to spoof. I'm sorry.
Right.
I'd be happy to talk to you factually about the details, but I won't do that. But it started from a release to the AP wire by the St. Petersburg Times.
And right.
I've had some conversations with their editor, the reporter who wrote it. I sent a letter into the editor that would clarify a great deal of the misinformation they put out there. They refused to print it. This is really the next growing conversation I think that has to be had. I'm not in favor of state-run media by all means, but certainly from my position, many of our media outlets are out of control, and they're not researching and reporting. They're scripting and performing based on the owner's ideological perspective. And I just think that's damaging. I think the media's responsibility as the fourth estate, if you will, is equal to, if not greater than, that which is given to we elected officials. It is important, particularly in this day and age of info technology and seconds, that those folks who are given the responsibility of reporting that are fair and balanced and unbiased. I don't see a lot of that in many areas. I don't see it down here in our newspaper, and I've made that clear. I'm not talking out of class. They're very familiar with me. I'm very straight and direct. My wife calls me the equal opportunity offender. That, I'm not concerned with who I tick off. I just tell the truth as I see it, and I just believe we need a lot of that. That's where it started, frankly, and it was released to the AP wire as misinformation. A lot of them went from that.
that actually happens a lot. I did an interview recently with the couple out in Missouri who was attacked by the USDA for that $4 million fine for selling a couple of pet rabbits without a license. And the same exact thing happened to them. The AP story was incorrect. That hit the wires, and everyone else went with the incorrect version. And the same thing. They contacted the original reporter, the original media outlet, and said, here's our letter, please, and they refused.
This and it's unfortunate. It turns into a practice of duplication versus verification. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I found a lot of the national media folks that I mentioned earlier, once they called me directly because my name was there, this is the guy who spearheaded it, this is the bad guy.
Yes.
Once I spoke with them, they went, wow, really? And I said, yeah, this is exactly what happened. And I'd send them to the website to view. You can view the meeting. And then, of course, the interview didn't fit the narrative, so they had to go to reporting the truth, which I respect several of them who did that. They said, okay, here's the follow-up, you know.
Right.
Particularly to due credit to the New York Times who did that, and others did when they filmed these long interviews down here with me on it, sent it back to Atlanta or wherever they're coming from, and they went, that's not what we understood to be the case. Mm-hmm. They verified it, and okay. So, and the editors here at the local paper have been a little upset at me, but I have a feeling he's getting some backlash from many different levels, to include the national press, going, hey, we spent money on this.
Right.
And it wasn't necessarily true.
Right. By then, many times the damage is done because so many average Americans have read this in so many different sources, and then their immediate reaction is, boy, this has to be true if everybody's saying it, right?
Oh, yeah. And of the many, many, literally hundreds of emails I've gotten, many of them are from around the country who picked it up off a national story. And I respond to them, give them some of the details, and I attach my letter to the editors that clarify a great deal of it and send it back to them. And then they, of course, respond going, thank you so much. I didn't realize this, and that's not what they said. And I'm going to send a letter, too. So I have a feeling that our local folks were inundated with some chastising, if you will, by readers. And, you know, that is the dangers of it. It kind of goes back to the old adage our parents, none of what you read and only half of what you see.
Exactly.
We had better start applying that because, as you said, damage is simply done just by making the statement.
Right.
That's where the heavy, heavy responsibility lies on those in those positions of mass communication. It does, I believe.
Absolutely. And, of course, that goes back to the old saying that freedom of the press is only guaranteed to those who own one.
You're right. That's it. You're right. You're absolutely right.
And it is a problem. And I guess one of the problems with addressing this problem is that once you do the research and you focus in on who actually owns the media, you realize that the media is part of the military-industrial banking complex. Of course, Eisenhower warned us about that in January of 1961. It seems like very few people have heeded that warning. And the ones who know about it, they purposely make sure that people can't get at the truth with the media in the hands of such a small, tight-knit group.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think it's aligned with any particular partisan ideology. I think both sides are equal. I mean, look what we recently discovered over in England with that whole deal where they were hacking into computers and cell phones, for heaven's sakes. That's very dangerous, in my opinion. When we start to realize that whether it be the media or the government is able to hack into your personal computer and your cell phone and remove things, that's troublesome. That's more troublesome, in my opinion, than a lot of things that are going on. We had better take a note of that, because if they can hack into the system and remove things, they can hack in there and drop things on it. And you'll see that as the next great political tool that will be used to crush and go after people that disagree with the current ideology that's being pushed out there. One of my favorite lines in one of the movies is one from Jurassic Park, where Jeff Goldblum is talking about the whole concept of happening. And his line is that we were so consumed of whether or not we could that we didn't stop and think whether or not we should.
Right.
And that, I think, a lot of times is a great thought process to apply to technology. It's all wonderful, but we had better think it through, you know,
right.
How some folks could use this to hurt versus help.
And I was thinking of a movie, actually, when you were talking about the process of manipulating technology, I was thinking of that movie, which I've mentioned several times, The Running Man, where they had Arnold Schwarzenegger, where they morphed the video and they showed him instead of helping people, killing them. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do. And that's exactly it. I mean, it's fascinating how you look at some things even back then, the old Big Brother series and all that sort of stuff, and start looking at it going, well, I'll be darned, it's happening. We've taken cameras for red lights. We've taken from to serve and protect, to observe and collect. I mean, it's got issues. Technology is wonderful. It can be used for many good things, but we can't be so naive as to not to realize that it can be used for bad things too. And we have to be cautious on how we approach it.
You're right. This matter, is it done, or is there a chance that this might be resurrected and reverse the decision?
With respect to public drinking water, I don't think any matter is really closed. Our local dentist organizations are angry about this, mind you. I'm going to be speaking before them at their next month's meeting. They're actually dabbling with me, having me appear, and to digress real quickly, mind you, this is based off that misrepresentation of the facts. They're actually dabbling with me, talking to their national convention, and trying to justify the concept of why I ceased adding additional levels here. But lost in the narrative is the fact that we're one of 200 communities around the country in the past 4 years that have done this. A lot of communities are looking at this and going, maybe we ought to take a second look, if you will. So I have no problem with them putting the stats and the information and the details together, not anecdotal, not just telling me that, hey, this group says it's the best thing since Skippy peanut butter. No, I want facts and details. This is something people are drinking. Anecdotal evidence, I don't want it to turn into an antidote. Mm-hmm. We need to deal with the pure facts of it. So I imagine if everybody came back, the rhetorical dust settles, like I said earlier, and presented a case of, here, this is why we think, then I have no doubt that our process would work whereby they'd have a chance to represent, if you will, their case and for another consideration. I'm not closed-minded to anything. I'm open-minded to it. So I certainly don't profess that I know it all. So I don't think it's over, and I don't think it is ever over. You need to be open and ready to readdress and discuss any issue that involves particularly the public health.
Like I said, I wish more people thought that way. Commissioner, one of the articles online at TampaBay.com says Pinellas County Commission stands firm in decision to end fluoridation, and this was Wednesday, October 12th. It says here that one of the public citizens who was at the meeting handed all seven commissioners a book, The Fluoride Deception, which, of course, is probably the anti-fluoridation group's Bible when it comes to understanding fluoride, written by an investigative reporter.
Yeah.
Did you read that book?
I haven't read it cover to cover, no, but this book was first handed to me. I first heard of the book, if you will, back in 2003 when this issue began here. And they did. They came up and gave us all a hard copy. As we're speaking, I'm looking over at my shelf and see it's still sitting there. I have gone through parts of it. I've looked at a lot of different things online and in the library to find all different various ideas and thoughts and opinions on this. And each are coming from respected doctors, respected dentists. So to hold one up and say this is the absolute truth is hard to do because there are folks on each side of the issue who have credentials and profess their position as being the one, if you will. But I certainly will give it its due, and I have flipped through parts of it, yeah. It's very interesting stuff, and it's one of several that are out there, really. And talking to a gentleman in California, a doctor out there, who he's going to be calling me back with more. I think he has a radio show somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm.
But he and a colleague of his started out to study the increased crime among young African-American folks within a particular demographic area in, I think, Portland.
Right.
And they have traced it back into the pineal gland and heavy concentrations of fluorosilicic acid, which turned their study into a fluoride study and this particular type of fluoride use. So it's really fascinating. Like I said, I don't think anyone on either side has the ultimate say, and that in there lies the very essence of why my motion was to stop.
This interview is going to be heard by many folks all around the country and the world. Would it make sense for any of them to let you know how they feel? Also, would you say that it would be okay for them to send you an email?
Absolutely. No information is wrong. It really is. It's something that everybody should be looking at and be willing to consider and hear from it, whether they're wearing a lab coat or a pair of jeans. If integrity came with the suit, then Madoff would be running this country, for heaven's sake. I'm open to any ideas and thoughts on it. And I think the most important thing that folks need to know is the difference between sort of the governing concept of fluoridation of the public drinking water and drilling down to the real issue underneath that, which are the chemicals that we actually use to fluoridate the water. Don't get caught up in that sort of anecdotal blanket of, hey, it's just this organization. The CDC, mind you, says it's wonderful, but do you realize that the FDA has not approved the fluorosilicic acid for ingestion and will not approve it? So you've even got competing government agencies that will not come to consensus on it. So don't just accept a placard or a billboard. Do your research at all levels. Ask doctors. Go deeply. Ask scientists. Do your studies on it. Don't believe what the newspaper says and take it as the word. Do your research. It is more important now than ever, frankly.
And, of course, the website is pinellascounty.org. That's P-I-N-E-L-L-A-S county.org. And Norm Roach, last name is spelled R-O-C-H-E. And his email address is nroach@pinellascounty.org. So if you'd like to contact the commissioner and express your views, whether they're in favor or opposed to this, or if you have some information for him, as he said, the debate is, or should be, always wide open. And any new information that could be gathered and disseminated is welcome. Norm Roach, the commissioner on the Pinellas County, Florida Board of County Commissioners. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent today explaining all this to the listeners and looking forward to speaking to you in the future.
Well, thank you, Dave, and you're to be commended for going beyond the soundbite. I thank you so much for it and getting into the details and discussion, and I truly appreciate the opportunity to go deeper into this and get to the real facts, so I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir.
Anytime, Dave.